Welcome to Take Note on WPSU. I'm Shireen Stanford. Carol Thomas Sissel is the minister of the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship of Center County in State College. She served in various roles at Unitarian Universalist congregations in Maryland, California, Washington State, Oklahoma, and New Jersey for more than 15 years. She believes that social justice work is at the core of the church. She's passionate about travel, art collecting, family, interfaith activism, and building community. Reverend Carol Thomas Sissel, thank you for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
What drew you to ministry? What led you to ministry?
So if you asked friends that I had 20 years ago why I was a minister, they would be laughing loudly. There was no inkling. There was no thought about it. It was not on the pathway at all. The reason I'm a minister was sort of the perfect storm of painful and compassionate events. My husband was diagnosed with cancer in 2003. I ultimately lost him in 2008. In that window, I found Unitarian Universalism in a just upfront, loving, in-your-face, we're going to help you kind of way. I joined a UU church in 2004-ish. Signed a book in 2006, and somehow ended up in seminary in 2010. So the call story comes out of losing someone but finding something and realizing and you're on the other side of a death, if you're on the other side of trials and tribulations. Like sometimes, like they say, the window opens or the door opens. And when the door opened for me to go into ministry through my home church minister, I just walked through it. And my decision in that space was, as long as the doors keep opening, keep walking through them. So that's sort of the nexus of the call story.
How did you find your way to Unitarian Universalism?
Off an exit on the Beltway in the Washington, D.C. area. The first UU church I went to, it sort of had all the things that church is supposed to. It was bigger. It had hardwood floors. It had gorgeous shaker chairs. It had a real chancel and a pulpit. And a minister that wore a robe and had a stole. While I was moving through the experience of cancer, it got harder and harder to get to that church, which was River Road Unitarian Church. And I had to go around the Beltway to get to it. I was in the D.C. area. One morning, I knew I was going to be late. I still wanted to go to church. And I got there, and the noise of my shoes going into the church made people turn around and look. And I had that moment you have sometimes when you're like, oh, I'm not going to be the black person that's late for church on Sunday again. The next Sunday when I got up and I was heading to River Road, I stopped and I got off the Beltway a couple exits early. There was this little UU church called the Unitarian Universalist Church of Silver Spring. And I went in and I was early and it was quiet. And there was a blue carpet, blue chairs, gorgeous, like blonde wood all around. And I had found my church. And I had found the place I was supposed to be. River Road is a great place. I'm not dissing them at all. But the UU Church of Silver Spring, Maryland, that was my first church home.
And you felt that when you walked in?
Absolutely. Yeah. I knew I was where I was supposed to be.
Can you explain what a Unitarian Universalist is and what you believe in?
So often people get that question and they tell you what we are not. We are not creedal, they will say. We don't believe in the Trinity. We don't lift up the Jesus, the Christ, in ways that most Christian churches do. I'd rather go in the other direction and tell you what we are is the open table. On any Sunday, I may have atheists, agnostics, Christians, used to be Presbyterians, sort of Baptists, not Jewish except like on holidays, sitting in my congregation. So that's who we are. We are people who are seeking. We are people of faith. We are this sort of glorious hodgepodge of belief systems that somehow makes space for all of us to come together. And that's the telling part of Unitarian Universalism, is we find a way to bring all of that into the same room and somehow still want to have like potluck dinners together. We believe in the interconnectedness of things, the inherent worth and dignity of human beings, no matter what their gender is, their sexuality, their skin color, their age. We are grounded in community and in love and in taking care of each other.
Are there challenges to ministering to people who, as you said, could be agnostic, could have completely different beliefs?
That's a piece of cake.
Yeah. What are some of those challenges?
They all just come in and it's just like Rebecca of Sunnybrook Farm, easy, no opinions, and no ideas of their own. It's challenging because Unitarians are like fiercely independent and amazingly intelligent and deeply feeling. And when you put those three things together, you can have an explosive potluck if you're not careful with people. If you don't remember human beings are going to show up and, oh my gosh, there they are being human. It can be really, really challenging. Yeah. I tell people to breathe a lot. Stop and breathe. And I remind people about right relationship. So when you move through the world, you get to make choices all the time. One of the choices I want people to make is to be in and stay in right relationship with each other.
What do you love about the work?
Everything, except the meetings that go on and on in the evening. Oh, there was a point when I thought I'd be a chaplain. And actually, that's where the journey started. With my husband's illness, we were in and out of hospitals. He was an atheist. There was never someone who really took care of his lack of spirit. And I thought I'd be a hospital chaplain. And what I quickly found out during seminary and taking CPE, my clinical pastoral education, that's a chaplaincy period, was I needed to be with people longer than hospital chaplaincy allows you to be with them. So I love this idea of being with people on the journey, on the arc. You know, you get to see them at their best, at their worst, when they're about to have a baby and everything is terrible and stressful and what am I going to do with this baby that's coming? On the other side, when the whole family is there and you're naming this baby, you know, a year or two later when they've lost their grandpa and we're memorializing him. And just everything that's in between is what you get to do when you're the Rev. And it's just glorious. It doesn't mean it's not hard and it's not challenging, but the whole arc is just beautiful. And that's what I love, is all the pieces.
And before you did this, you mentioned your husband, Dick.
Mm-hmm. Dick Sissel.
Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about how you worked together and what you did before you got into this.
So that's why I say friends from 20 years ago are like, who is that on the radio? Carol's a minister somewhere. We were a partnered family, small business, electrical contracting, which has nothing to do with ministry, other than it's kind of like a journey, too. So my husband ran an electrical contracting business. He already owned it when I met him. We decided we'd work together after we got married. And then we decided we wanted to stay married, so we stopped working together. He was a great guy. He was kind of a Renaissance man. He loved music and the Baltimore Orioles. He introduced me to Cal Ripken. He was a really, just a cool guy. Yeah. And it's sad that he's gone.
You talked a little bit about people on their journey and you mm-hmm. get to be there with them. Has your ministry changed over time?
I think it has changed. Immediately it kind of moved away from this idea of being a chaplain and in the emergency setting of people's lives in short spurts of time. When I first got to work with a congregation as an intern minister, it shifted again. That was in Washington State in Port Townsend. And that's when I got to really see how people are with each other and how they take care of each other in ways large and small. So my ministry started to shift from small pots of joy, like chaplaincy, that wasn't going to do it. Then I was in ministry in Port Townsend, and it was much more the top side of ministry. There was a lot of preaching. I had an amazing, amazing intern minister who was my teaching minister that just let me out into the world with my voice. And that's where I developed my preaching style, really was there. I had a year when, as an intern, I preached 23 times, and that's unheard of. It just doesn't happen. We don't get that kind of access to other pulpits in different sized churches. And Reverend Bruce Bodie let me do that. So I got to see the top side. I got to learn about running meetings. And I got to do some pastoral care. The next shift when I went to Oklahoma, and then when I went to New Jersey, was the other side of ministry, was that pastoral care piece. And I find myself leaning into the one-on-one pastoral care the longer I'm in ministry, the really talking to people, the finding out where they are, the listening most of all. It's being the person that just listens to people is an extraordinary gift for someone. And I do that. I do that a lot, the listening pastoral care piece. Oftentimes, people don't even get to hear what they think they want. So when they put their voice to it and they get to say it out loud to their minister, I can watch the lights, like, go on or the shades come up. It's the most amazing thing for someone to voice what they want in the world or how they're feeling and then have it reflected back at them. So that's a piece where my ministry has changed. Yeah.
What drew you to the congregation in State College?
So again, if you had asked me 10 years ago if I'd be in the middle of Pennsylvania, I would have been like, where? What's there? Oh, Nittany Lions, right? That's where Penn State is. That's all I knew about State College. But in 2017, I was in the UU search process, and it's kind of like Match.com. Congregations and ministers build profiles. They go up on a website. You actually click boxes on the ones you like. And then you go through this process of kind of weeding it down. They were one of the boxes that I clicked. They then clicked my box. So that was like our first date. Then we had a phone conversation. And that was like having a drink, not just coffee. And then they invited me to come for what's called a pre-candidating weekend. And that's like, that's a weekend away. So you're all on your best behavior.
It's a big step.
It's a big step. So you go online and you match it up, and then you do this Zoom interview with five of them in a room around a computer and just you on the other side of the Zoom call. And then you come for the weekend. And then at the end of the weekend, for me, what happened? It was like, oh, what am I going to do with this? This is where I think I'm supposed to be. Who's going to understand this? How am I going to explain this to my family that I'm going to Pennsylvania? But it was perfect. There was a moment at the end of the pre-candidating period when I was just in tears on the side of the road, and they had been in tears that morning at our goodbye breakfast, and we just knew that this is where I was supposed to come. So that's how I ended up here. It was an amazing search experience and a search committee who just, we fell in love with each other. Yeah.
So it's been almost 2 years.
I'm still alive.
Still alive. I think the congregation's still there.
They're still there.
Has it been what you thought it would be, or have there been surprises?
It's been both. So it's been everything I thought it would be and a bunch of things that I didn't expect. I've never lived in a small town, so that piece of the work has been incredibly just interesting and gratifying. So I live in a place now that's like Mayberry RFD. If I'm worried about something that has to do with policing, I can actually call the chief of police and go to coffee with him. John's an amazing man. And he'll take my call and he'll be like, so what's going on? So what are you thinking? What do you have to say? So that sort of connecting to people so quickly, like I've met every single minister in town just about, one-on-one and in several groups. That connecting so quickly and building bridges is something that I didn't expect. What was expected was the soft, warm, welcoming. When you move as a minister, it's different than moving in real life. And I say real life with meaning. When you move as a minister, they're waiting for you. They're expecting you. There's food in your fridge when you get here. There's cardboard on the floor in your new townhouse because it was a rainy day and they knew the moving truck was coming and they didn't want your stuff to get messed up. There's this incredible space of welcoming and wanting you to be here. So I expected that because ministers had told me. I didn't know what it was going to feel like, though.
So I first heard you speak at the vigil after the mass shooting in January, where a young man killed three people and himself.
Yeah.
You asked people to hold hands and join you in prayer.
I did.
Why have you taken such an active and visible and vocal role in issues in the community?
There's a space that our fellowship and me as the leader, spiritual leader of the fellowship occupies, that I think it's really important, is public. So we are a liberal religious community, and we have definite ideas about, reproductive rights, about gun laws and gun violence that's going on, about politics. One of the reasons I came to State College and they chose me was because I have a voice that speaks clearly, loudly, and truth to power. And I do that as often as I can, and they support me in doing that. Yeah.
You've said that social justice work lies at the very core of church. Mm-hmm. Why is that? Why are the two connected?
So church or fellowship or congregations, in my eyes, are about loving and taking care of each other. Social justice is about loving and taking care of people on the margins, the people who are forgotten, whether they're black, they're brown, they're female, they're disabled, they're poor. The folks who are underrepresented are at the top of what social justice is about. And we belong to each other, and we need to take care of all of the people that belong to us and that we belong to. So it's the heart of church is around helping people inside and outside of that community.
If you're just joining us, this is Take Note on WPSU. I'm Shereen Stanford. Our guest is Carol Thomas Sissel, the minister for the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship of Center County. You're a Renaissance woman yourself because that you had an exhibit at the Bellefonte Art Museum of Native American and First Nations art. How did you begin collecting that artwork?
So the art thing in Bellefonte is another example of the Mayberry RFD effect. Somebody in my fellowship in the church found out that I have an art collection, and they told Pat House, who's at the museum, and Pat House said, well, maybe I'll come over and see what you have. And she came to my house, like her and me in my house looking at my art, and the rest, like they say, is history. The collection, and it's really interesting to call it a collection now, and that's new for me, because mostly it was just like art in my house. We loved, me and my husband, the Northwest, Seattle, Portland, the Oregon coast, everything about it, how green it is, that wild, rugged coast. And in trips to the Northwest, you end up in airports. In particular, we ended up in the Seattle airport and the Portland airport, and you end up in airport gift shops. So the art thing started like anything else, tchotchkes, a shot glass with a totem pole on it, or a kind of a refrigerator magnet, or a really inexpensive print, or a coffee mug. And as the trips multiplied, he had a brother in Eugene, Oregon, we would go see. And the love for the Northwest grew. Ultimately, we bought a house in Portland, Oregon. I saw more and more art, and it moved outside of the airport. And there was an experience I had in an airport gift shop. I was about to buy something that was just a little more expensive than you should buy. And a woman in the gift shop said, you know, there's a gallery you should go to. Don't buy that here. And she told me where it was, and I went to the gallery. And that was when it really took off, was that opened this whole world to me of what it's like to go in a gallery, to pursue something that you think you might fall in love with, but then find something else that's even more fantastic and that's actually affordable. So the art, it started with prints, and then it took off from there, and now it's prints and it's wooden masks. And I actually have like a 10-foot-tall totem pole in my living room with a big glass sun on the top of it. It kind of took a life of its own, but it just speaks to me in so many ways.
And is it all Native or First Nations art?
It is all First Nations, some tribes from Washington State, but it's primarily First Nations art. Yeah, tribes along the Sunshine Coast, so north of Vancouver, Coastal Salish, Haudai, Kawakatal.
And before you were a reverend, there was Carol.
There was. There still is.
So are those different people?
Well, what's that saying? You can take the boy off the farm, but you can't take the farm out the boy. Clergy try very hard not to lose themselves, but to bring their fullest selves to the work. So I show up in everything I do. I'm slightly irreverent. I have a good sense of quirky humor. I'm authentic, sometimes to a fault. And that's all Carol, but it shows up in my work. She hasn't disappeared. Sometimes she gets set aside, though, because the work is consuming, and there are large parts of myself that don't belong to me anymore. And I say that with the most love and care. As clergy, as a minister, as a reverend, you move into a space where you and your time belong to other people. In particular, as a UU minister, what I find is more of me belongs to them every day, but they're more accepting of who Carol is every day, too. So it works.
How do you take care of yourself? You spend a lot of time taking care of other people. You probably hold, I would think, other people's secrets, some of their joys, some of the hardest things. But how do you make sure that you're taking care of yourself?
I do a couple things that just really frame my days. I believe in the power of prayer. And that's a bit odd for a UU minister to say that I start my day with prayer or meditation. But I have a prayer bead bracelet here. And every morning when I get up and I do some stretching, but then I work through this bracelet bead by bead. And I say prayers and lift up my family. I lift up the congregation. I lift up friends. I say a prayer for Joy, my dog. And in doing that, it grounds me and connects me and readies me for the day. So I do that to take care of myself. I just recently found the gym that's going to work for me. And I've been working out 2, 3, 4 days a week, depending on my schedule. So that's taking care of me. The other thing I do is I drive with the top down. I have a VW Bug convertible, and it's got a really great Bose sound system in it. I put the top down even in the winter. I put the music all the way up loud, and I drive back roads. And that's a way of centering myself, of letting Carol hear her music in the fresh air. And it's a complete luxury. I learned to drive with the top down in the winter in San Francisco because it's always cold there. You just turn the heat all the way up, and you put the windows up, and it, like, holds the heat inside.
What music is blasting when you're driving?
Oh, Aretha Franklin is at the top of the list. Marvin Gaye, The Temptations. Throw in some Bruce Springsteen. Add a little Dave Matthews on the side. And sometimes gospel music. I like Hezekiah Walker.
One person I know you love very much is your grandson.
He's delightful.
Tell me what's great about being a grandmother.
Oh, my God. It's everything that people say. It's like cotton candy. It's not the giving them back, though. It's the pure, just unblemished affection for somebody who gives that right back to you instantly. Sometimes I see Andrew, once in a month. Sometimes I get to spend like 3 days with him. So we have breakfast together every day, and then I get to read bedtime stories to him. Whether it's once a month or it's like for a 3-day period, it's just all about me and Andrew. It's about Gigi and PB in this just like amazing cocoon of deliciousness.
One of the things that I think you probably have access to, or maybe some of the issues that are facing our local community, are there things, challenges that you think Center County needs to grapple with and deal with that you've seen in your 2 years here?
The thing that's bubbled up for me and really has gone beyond bubbling up has to do with gun violence. So the idea that in January, State College became the place where the 20th mass shooting happened on the 24th day of the year is astounding. First, that there had already been that many shootings, and they call a mass shooting an incident where 5 people die at the hand of one person, I think is the new definition. But gun violence has come home to State College. We had a mass shooting. We've had a shooting of a black man by 3 white police officers now. That's about guns, first and foremost. That's about violence. And that is something that just, there's no place for that kind of violence in our community. And there has to be ways that we address it and we approach it to make sure it doesn't happen again. I've been struck over and over by people saying to me, oh, that doesn't happen here. Like somehow we were outside of the real world. We're not outside of the real world. Gun violence happens here. I think we are called to move into the space, to take care of each other, and to rid ourselves of the anger and the animosity that is attached to gun violence. That's what I think I want to say about it. It's not just about the fact that a young man killed a number of people. It's not just about the fact that three police officers used tasers and a gun to end a young man's life. We're in this place where the violence is running in a cycle, and it's driving us to do things that are not in right relationship, to not take care of each other. That's what I want to help stop. And that's come home to my new home.
Where do you find hope?
Everywhere. Everywhere. I find hope with my grandson. I find hope looking at the kids at church. We just had RE Sunday, and that's Religious Education Sunday, so all the classes had something to say. What was beautiful about it is all our classes were working on different world religions. So they brought the world into our sanctuary with different ways of being, with a meditation, with something from paganism and Wicca, with a Jewish prayer. It was gorgeous the way they brought all those things together. I find hope in that. I find a great deal of hope in watching the sunrise. I find hope in playing with my dog. I think it's really important that in this time that is so challenging and that is so full of conflict in our country, that we don't lose sight of hope. One of the things I'm going to work on this summer, we get to take time off in the summer, is resilience. And I find hope in resilience. How do you bounce back? What feeds your spirit? What do you do every day to bring you back to the world? I think if you can be in touch with those things and build resilience, hope is right there for you.
Reverend Carol Thomas Sissel, thank you for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me. Cheers.
Carol Thomas Sissel is the minister of the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship of Center County in State College. She served in various roles at Unitarian Universalist congregations in Maryland, California, Washington State, Oklahoma, and New Jersey for more than 15 years. She believes that social justice work is at the core of the church. She's passionate about travel, art collecting, family, interfaith activism, and building community. Hear more Take Note interviews on our website at wpsu.org/take note. I'm Shereen Stanford, WPSU.